Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Pastor Choga, good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon, Zama. How are you?
Very well, thank you, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Lovely. We've come to the last day of our discussion. I must tell you that a little sad, man, because, you know, we were, you know, together with the listeners, I mean, we were gaining quite a bit. Sad that it's coming to an end, but grateful that we've had to learn quite a lot. I must say thank you so much for coming through.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to be of service.
Thank you so, so much. Now, one of the most unbelieved statements in the Bible is, it is more blessed to give than to receive. It's coming from Acts 20, verse 35. Now, the giver happier than the receiver? Surely some mistake, because gifts obviously benefit the recipient. They become excited for receiving. For instance, the church continues in its ministry. The hungry are fed and they are happy. Missionaries are sent. Mm-hmm. But from God's point of view, it seems that generosity is more important for the giver than the one who receives. So we're going to be looking at that and highlighting that today. So, Pastor, how does this even make sense, that Acts 20:35? How is it more blessed to give than to receive? Surely, most people would argue that, in fact, when you receive, you get happier and more excited.
Yeah, sure. It actually sounds very counterintuitive. Mm. And myself being a person who teaches a lot about giving and all, because that's what I do in my job, I have actually had a time to struggle with that text. It is more blessed to give than to receive.
Mm.
It's interesting because it's only found in Acts 20:35.
Mm-hmm.
Paul claims that Jesus says it. We don't find it in the Gospels, but like John said, it's John who said the many things that Jesus said and did, and we cannot put all that in a book.
Mm-hmm.
So this is most probably something that Jesus said, and maybe if we had found where he exactly said it, maybe he gave us a parable or something to help explain it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't find it.
Yeah.
You know, one place that I actually discovered that you will be able to understand the meaning of its text is actually in practical life.
Mm.
You have to experience it. You have to see it for you to believe that thing. So there is a Harvard professor called Arthur C. Brooks who talks about how to use your money to buy happiness. And he says, how do you get the most happiness out of maybe, say, you have extra money? Do you buy stuff? Do you buy time? Do you buy experiences? Do you give the money away? And he actually explains that among all those four things, the one that we usually rush to when we have extra money is buying stuff. But that's the least satisfying.
Mm.
Because when you use your money to buy stuff,
mm-hmm.
it puts you on what he calls a hedonic treadmill.
Mm. Oh, okay.
The hedonic treadmill is like this person who runs and keeps on increasing speed until they fall off the treadmill because it's moving too fast than they can run.
Mm.
So buying stuff never gives you satisfaction, because the moment you buy something, you want something else. There's always this diminishing return that comes from stuff, because once you own it, it loses the value and the pull that it had. So you keep wanting more and more and more. And so getting stuff will never make you happy.
Mm.
But he then goes down the list and he actually claims that giving your money away will give you the greatest satisfaction in life. And for me, that was a confirmation of what Jesus says, because this is actually a person who's done psychology and sociology and looking at life experiences and saying, yes, people who give things away are happy.
Mm.
And if you allow me, I will tell you the four areas in which this happiness comes.
Okay.
Because he says, number one, when you give or volunteer, it improves your sense of control over the environment. So that leads you to higher personal effectiveness and greater personal success. People who give, you might not see it happening in the moment of giving, but that's actually the unintended consequence. It's automatic. You will get that benefit. The second benefit is that it's a great source of meaning and purpose in the lives of people. So it improves happiness and it also improves health.
Mm.
Then there is also the evidence that has been seen that people who are generous are generally regarded as leaders in their society.
Mm.
So people will have a positive view of you if you are a giver. But then he also goes on to talk about the negative, to say, if you give and you make noise about what you have given and you demonstrate, you want people to know that you have given, instead of it producing a positive result, it makes people despise and hate you for it. So whenever you give, in order to get that benefit, no one has to know. You have to make it a private thing, and then people respect you and they see you as a leader. And then the final thing is the social capital that charitable acts create. It creates trust and social cohesion within a community, which leads to happiness, health, prosperity in the community. So if people were more of givers, more networks would be formed, relationships would be strengthened. The world would generally be a better place if we were givers. So when you look at it from a practical perspective of what giving does in a person's life, it's true. It's more blessed to give than to receive.
I like the way you put it, Pastor, that you presented evidence and you came with the backup information, and truly we can conclude, and I agree with you, that it is truly blessed to give than to receive. Now, if you could please share an example of a biblical story or maybe a character that exemplifies absolute generosity.
Yeah, yeah. The greatest example of generosity in the Bible could be Jesus Christ. Though he was rich, but for he left the throne of heaven and he poured himself all out. But I know what people will say. They will say, look, Pastor, you're pointing us to Jesus. Look, that's too much for us to reach. Look for a human being. So if I can look for a general person who showed generosity, it doesn't get better than the churches in Macedonia.
Okay, all right.
The Bible says in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 2, in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. It's a confusing text because there is great trial of affliction and yet there is abundance of joy.
There is
deep poverty and yet there is rich liberality. When you read on, it says, for I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering of the saints. And not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord, and then to us by the will of God. This is a Macedonian experience where you have people who are going through serious trial, who are poor. You could almost say when you're looking at them, they should be exempted from an expectation to give because of where they are. But Paul says they actually implored, they begged for an opportunity to be able to give. So that the abundance of liberality doesn't come because they were rich, but though even in their deep poverty, they abounded in riches of liberality. So what breaks the bank is not the $1 million that a person has. What breaks the bank is the willingness of the heart to do not only what was expected, but they were willing to do above what was expected. And that broke the record of generosity. So it, you know, it says to me, you don't need even to be rich to be generous. And I've seen it from experience. Some of the most generous people may not necessarily be considered as the most rich people, but it's just giving what the little things that you have.
So meaning that you now have killed completely an excuse that says that, well, I'm poor, I cannot give.
Actually, if you hear a person who is saying, I'm poor, I cannot give because I'm poor, the day I'm going to be rich, I'm going to give, the person will never give. Because studies have shown that people do not become more generous as they become richer. The richer people give less and less of their income in terms of percentage than poorer people. So generosity doesn't have to do with what, actually, the opposite is true. The more you have, the more difficult it becomes to give.
Yeah, that's a powerful statement. Now, what is the difference, Pastor, between being a good steward of what you have and holding on to your possessions too tightly?
I love the question. And this question applies more to church-going people because they usually use stewardship as an excuse for being stingy. Because they're saying, I'm organized, I don't want things that just come up. And now they use that I'm being careful with what I have as an excuse for being stingy, I don't think this is what the Bible means. Mm. We are actually being responsible stewards so that we are better able to give. So the more organized we are, the more we save, the more we have available to be able to give out to others. Let's not use being a steward or being organized as an excuse for being stingy. Yeah.
Mm. Now, we've touched on this earlier in the week, the balance between taking care of our personal financial obligations and also being generous towards others.
Yeah, sure. And both areas are very, very important. The text that we were reading in Acts chapter 20, 35 actually talks in the same line you're talking, being able to take care of your needs and then helping others. I just want to get there to Acts 20 and show you what Paul had actually said before. He said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Mm-hmm. He says, I've shown you in every way by laboring like this that you may support the weak. Before we get to that point, he had said, you yourselves knows that these hands provided for my necessity and those who are with me. Mm-hmm. So he labors both for his needs and those who are with him, and he also labors so that he can have something to give to the weak. It's legitimate to work for our comforts. It's not a sin. It's legitimate to work for our convenience. It's part of our stewardship responsibility. It's not a sin. And yet, as we work, we try to do more so that we have more to give. As we spend, we try to spend less and not be wasteful, so that what we are able to save from what we have can be used to help those who cannot help themselves. So that balance should always be created, in the sense that I think I mentioned at some time this week that there needs to be a deliberate decision that I'm going to help the weak, so that in your planning, it's part of your purpose, in your budget, it's part of your calculations. So as you do your expenses and stuff like that, you're always trying to make it less and less so that you have more with which you can help those who are weak.
In fact, it reminds me of a verse, I think you mentioned it during the week, or we spoke about it during the week, where it talks about those who are harvesting must leave some produce or harvest on the fringes of their harvest, so that those who are poor can come and harvest there. I think we spoke about that.
No, we didn't, but I'm happy that you brought it up. So when God sets up his society, and he's speaking to them about how they are going to lead their economic lifestyle, he actually told those who harvest never to glean their fields, so that the poor will have something to pick. I think that's a very, very, thanks for bringing it up. It's a very good example of being deliberate.
Yeah.
So you're saying, I'm not harvesting the edges of my field because the poor should be able to come and glean here. When it falls to the ground, I'm not going to pick it up.
Yeah.
Allow the people to be able to what? To pick up those things that are there. It's actually a practical example of how we can be deliberate to say, this portion is reserved for those who are less fortunate.
Yeah, no, it's quite challenging. Now, Pastor, let me conclude, or let's conclude with this last, question to you. In what ways does living generously increase our trust in God, if at all?
Wow, that's huge, because part of the motivation for us to be generous comes from a realization that our life does not depend on what we have, but our life depends on God. You remember how Jesus said on his greatest sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, the manifesto of the kingdom, he says, do not worry about what you shall eat, what you shall drink, because your Father knows that you need these things. So giving is actually an expression of trust, where you are saying, even if I reduce what I have, even though it was not enough previously, but I further reduce it by giving away, I'm still sure that I'm going to make it, because life does not depend on the abundance of the goods that we have. Life depends on God, who provides our things. He knows that we need these things. So yes, giving enhances trust, and it can actually be a deliberate way where we can grow our faith in God. As we grow our giving, It's important for us never to be at the same level of giving that we were yesterday, to always try to give more and more and experience the power of God where we don't lack anything, even if we are increasing how much we are giving out. So it's a great question that you've brought, and it's a great way to end. Mm. Our giving should always be growing, and it will be growing our trust as it grows.
Wow, I like that, because sometimes we may think that, no man, I've been giving too much, and you try to reduce. But you are saying, no, instead, the opposite is true. That it, in fact, let's aim to increase, our giving. It reminds me of a certain gentleman. Is it not, who's the, Warren Buffett, I think it was, he's still alive, who has said that he now only lives on 80%. No, it's not Warren Buffett. But I'm just forgetting who he is. He's now living on 80% of his, rather 20% of his income, because 80% is given away. I think it stems from exactly what you are saying, that let's aim to give more and more and more. And I think that trusting God then means, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, that as you increase your giving, you are able to, like that gentleman, to be able to live on 20% of everything that you make. And it covers everything, and 80% really goes to those who need it, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So this is how giving can grow your trust, where you reduce what you have and still are able to do more with the less that has remained, because God is faithful.
Yes.
If he has promised that he will bless us when we give, we need to try him. That's why even in the Bible, there is that scripture that says you should try him when it comes to this issue of giving, and see if he will not open up the windows of heaven and pour so much blessing that you will have nowhere to put it. So it becomes a growing experience, trying God, and our faith is growing, trying God. I think we once had this discussion, although I gave a warning that it should not be a transaction.
Yes.
Yeah,
true.
It shouldn't be a transaction, but true. It should be a growing experience of knowing that God is faithful.
Mm-hmm. Now, Pastor, I'm going to let you go. It's been a fantastic week. Perhaps we want to just glean on just one aspect or two or three. How would you summarize what we've discussed this week, just briefly, as to just give us something to chew on as we face the Sabbath?
Yeah. So I will say that this week our discussion has shown that generosity is a very, very important element of our life. And the impact of generosity is not just the gift that is given and the good that it will do, but generosity has an impact on the person who has given in terms of transforming their character and making them more like Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Generosity is the antidote. It's the medicine for selfishness. And when we give, you know, selfishness is shaken. The more we give, selfishness is shaken. And as we continue to give, that selfishness is going to die in us. So we should actually crave for opportunities to give, because it's helping us to be better people. We also notice that generosity makes the society a better place. And it's a way that people can see the character of God through us, because this is what made the people in the early church to have an impact in their society, to say, wow, what kind of people are this? They are stingy with their bodies, and yet they are generous with what they have. Mm-hmm. They are better than us. We need to join them. You know, this is a kind of reaction that the world will see if the church becomes truly generous.
Mm. Beautiful stuff. Pastor Amasta, thank you so much. Grateful, extremely grateful for your time and having given us. These are gems, man, dropping bomb after bomb. Thank you so, so much for your time. Blessings to you and your family, and enjoy the Sabbath that is upcoming.
Thank you, Zama. I'm grateful for you having me on your show.
Thank you, Pastor. Bye-bye.
Adventist World Radio. From broadcast to baptism. Powered by SID Media.